In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are they going, are they going to try to keep it? Because right now, they are at an even number, correct?
Correct. So this would be to 17, I believe. I think they have 16 17. Now, and this would add them to 17.
Yeah, so like, does by adding UConn mean that they want to keep it? Do they want to keep it an even number and make it 18? And if so, does that mean that opens the door for somebody like Memphis? You know, there's that side of it to consider. But then also, like, maybe they don't, or maybe they don't pick Memphis. Maybe they pick somebody else to get to 18 or 20 or whatever it may be, whatever the number may be. So I think that what people should do is take a wait and see approach, but also at the very least, I mean, I don't know, like the way it struck me was ACC or bust. That's kind of the way it struck me, but you just never know. Like, these things are so fluid and so many variables go along with this, and I feel like if it wasn't a great sign for Memphis, then we'd have started hearing that chatter by now. And I know I haven't heard anything like that this stuff about UConn means that it's a bad thing for Memphis. So yeah, I think it's best to just kind of not try to project and just wait and see. I know that's hard. That's hard to do, but I think we all just got to wait and see.
Yeah, I think that's the appropriate response. All right, Munz, I appreciate.
Don't think we have to wait long.
No, I don't think we do either. I mean, I can make the case on the one hand. This shows that they are open for business, and I would be surprised if they're stopping at 17. And Brett Yormark has made the case, like, he believes their path to survival is kind of strength in numbers and having elite basketball.
Correct.
Like, so I don't think that rules out Memphis. I don't necessarily think it means that Memphis is next up. But I think the one thing I do feel, and I'm not even confident that, hey, this, you could tell me that this was a ploy by Yormark to try and put pressure on Big 12 presidents that, hey, like, we probably need to be in the deal making business here rather than, and that would imply that they're not as, like, fired up and wild about this, because it's not like UConn to the Big 12 was something that was just announced this weekend. Like, it's been ongoing for a while. Right. So I think you're right. The right approach is wait and see. But I do think the one thing that is obvious to me is you do not need to root for an you need to root for a few teams leaving the ACC, but you do not need to root for the ACC to go the way of the Pac-12, where it's like dead on arrival. Because I think if all those teams hit the market, the Big 12 is going to scoop up what they want, and I think that just pushes you farther and farther down their list. So I'm with you. I still think the best path is have a few teams leave the ACC. They've got to replenish, and you're one of those teams.
Yes, I tend to agree with that.
All right, Munz, we appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Jeffrey.
That is Jason Munz, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can read all of those stories up over at commercialappeal.com. When we come back, let's get into the list. Tiger football week one has begun. We've got our first official depth chart from Tiger football. We'll discuss that. We've got some news on the injury front. CeeDee Lamb's got a new deal. We'll discuss all of that and more, as well as the NFL, when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jeffrey and company make a list of the biggest stories, both good and bad, that we need to talk about. This is The List.
You just made the list!
Presented by Birdies 901, Memphis's place for virtual golf. The List on 92.9.
Tiger football.
You just made the list.
That's right, Kevin. It is indeed game week. The University of Memphis will open the season Saturday, 6 p.m. You can see it on ESPN Plus. At Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, they will take on North Alabama. But today's always a significant day, Kevin, because this is the day that the University of Memphis, with their game notes, like that's kind of another thing of when I start to know, all right, we're starting to get to game week. When you get the game notes provided by the school with the full depth chart, like that's when we start to get cooking. There were a couple of points to highlight this from the commercial appeals. Jonah Dillon does a great job covering the team. Make sure you're following him as well. Harris Boyd, the redshirt freshman, is listed as the backup quarterback. Jonah had written as such. Boyd has been in a three-way competition with freshman Arrington Maiden and redshirt junior Cade Cunningham. Not that Cade Cunningham, another Cade Cunningham, to back up Seth Hennigan. Boyd, a redshirt freshman from Rowlett, Texas, did enough during the offseason to win that spot. He did not appear in a game during his true freshman season. He is now, quote, a snap away from playing for the Tigers. It's possible we could see game action on Saturday if the Tigers are cruising to a blowout. So Harris Boyd wins the backup quarterback role. Also, whenever you get depth chart day, that means get ready to see the word or a lot, and we will see it in the running back position. Sutton Smith and Mario Anderson were listed together at running back. Anderson, who was South Carolina's leading rusher from a season ago, has been projected as Memphis's most impactful transfer this season, but Smith has been with the Tigers since 2022 and has flashed game-breaking potential. Coaches have talked about trying to get him more involved, and he could be in line for a more significant rushing workload in 2024. Kevin, when it comes to running back, unless I'm watching the Bartlett Panthers just gash my Owls on Friday to the tune of 335 yards, like, they're both going to play. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just, to me, like, both these guys are going to play, and they're both going to get a significant amount of snaps. I don't focus that much on other skill positions when I see the word or, because now there's so many snaps, everybody plays. The only thing that annoys me is when you have a quarterback, like, when you have three quarterbacks listed as or, it's like, okay, come on. You've picked one. You're not playing all three.
Right. Yeah. You got to pick the leader, right? The running back, it makes sense to have multiple running backs in certain situations. So, yeah, the or appears at the running back position. How many, and what else are we looking at? Is there anything else?
We're
going to see the backup quarterback. We're going to see Harris Boyd in action if everything goes the way it's supposed to on Saturday. Because the last time Memphis State played North Alabama State was, it was an enormous blowout, 50-something points, I believe. And so, yeah, we should see Harris Boyd in action this week and see what he can do. But
we certainly hope to see Harris in action. Like, you'll see it, like, on the – they list five wide receivers. So, Demir Blankensee and Kobe Drake are obviously going to be on the field when the game starts. But then you have Jamari Hopkins or Jacoby Banks. And then Marcella Busey is listed as – underneath Kobe Drake. Like, you'll see it there. And then the other spot that we see it is not the starting tackles, but whoever's backing up. Like, Chris Adams has won the left tackle job. That was significant. He is the transfer from Old Dominion. He gets the left tackle spot. Jalen Nichols is listed as the backup. He was also a transfer from South Carolina. That moves Xavier Hill inside to guard. Trent Holler will continue to be the center. Jonah Gamble will be the right guard. And then Kedrell Lewis will be the right tackle. They have another or with Jonathan Young or Calvin McMillan as to who backs him up. Like that's kind of another spot that you'll see it.
All right. Well, it's going to be a fun week looking ahead to some Tiger football action this Saturday, and one of the best rosters we've seen, supposed to be. So, you know, even if you're got an or next to your name, you've got a chance to be part of a historic season.
Joan also wrote about the defensive side of the depth chart. Up front, redshirt junior William Whitlow Jr. and La Monroe transfer Javon Dennis are listed as defensive end starters, while Indiana transfer Patrick Lucas Jr. is listed as the starter in the interior. They're going to the 3-3-5. So the defense that we saw at the bowl game, that's what they're going to roll with. Also, fellow IU transfer Kobe Miner is one of the starting corners, with Davion Ross back from injury and set to start on the other side. Akron transfer A.J. Watts is listed as a starter at safety, along with Andarius Coffey, while Greg Rubin will play the hybrid Tiger role as well. Also, a little bit of other injury information. Cortland Marsh, according to Ryan Silverfield, is likely out for the regular season. Marsh has been a potential starter after transferring from Sanford this offseason. Quote, he had a significant injury that will have him out for the rest of the foreseeable couple of months. So that's kind of bad news on the other injury front. The other thing that Jonah did today, Jonah released his game-by-game predictions for the 2024 season. So Jonah kind of sees it the same way. Like, I give Jonah credit. I think this is one of the hardest Tiger football years to prognosticate, and Jonah's got to put his name on it and go out with it. So Jonah has 9-3. He has wins against North Alabama and Troy to start the season, close loss at Florida State, 2-score win over Navy, 3-score win over MTSU. He has the Tigers getting upset at South Florida, Tigers winning comfortably against North Texas, comfortably against Charlotte, close win at UTSA, 2-score win against Rice, 3-score win against UAB, and then he has a close loss at Tulane, 24-21, to close the season. It's one of those things that I think if you made me predict, if I can only pick one 12-game record, I do think I go 9-3. The problem is finding the three losses and whatnot. If the season plays out like Jonah laid out, which I don't really have a much of a gripe with, the only problem that I see in that schedule is, okay, do those two USF losses, or do the losses to USF and Tulane, I think it's safe to say at that point, you're probably not hosting the conference championship game. But the question then becomes is, does that knock you out of the conference championship game? You could make a case, probably not, because USF could win that. You could talk me into where USF wins that game against Memphis, but then goes on to lose a couple more. And so you could also talk me into that win at UTSA could knock out, that head-to-head could be very important, and that gets you back into the game. But the 9-3 season to me is still kind of that, I don't really know how to evaluate, if indeed that were to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I know it doesn't make great radio, but I as far as agreeing with Jonas, predictions, but they, like, if you're looking at if you're a Tiger fan, this is what you hope the worst case scenario is. This is what you hope it is, right? South Florida loss makes sense. It's the team, though, that you really don't want to be losing to while people are inviting other teams to other conferences right now with UConn news and stuff. I wouldn't want to be messing around with South Florida or Tulane, but those are the teams that he's predicting them to lose to. Not surprised, and as how the schedule lays out that could be the case. But I mean, I agree. His prediction's great, but it should be, hopefully it's the worst case scenario if you're a Tiger. But honestly, I don't see, any scenario for fans getting excited with a 9-3 finish, no matter who you lose to.
No, I kind of fear that. I fear that 9-3 season gets us back to at the end of the year where we're just kind of looking at each other like, well, we know the program has not cratered. Like, we're not going to act like, okay, this is a disaster for Tiger football. But, like, I do think we're sitting there going, like, you know, if not this year, when? The thing that's interesting about...
It's really, what else do we have in our hand? What else? Every time the Tigers have, like, a mediocre year, it's like, well, what else do we have that we can try to sell to these other conferences, right? Like, how much FedEx money can we get? Like, isn't basketball turning around? Like, come on, we got some great stuff here. Because...
have you seen the renderings
football,
for...
our, can't sell them on the football.
Have you seen the renderings for our new football stadium? We're going to renovate FedEx Forum, too. The thing that's fascinating about USF is... their schedule sets up very, it can go one of two ways. So they open with Bethune-Cookman, all right, win. But then they go to Alabama, to Southern
really?
Miss,
okay. Yeah.
They host Miami, and then they go to Tulane. Ooh. So
that's what I want for a schedule right there.
Well, that's the question, though.
I mean, that's good.
So, if you're telling me South Florida is going to play all of their guys and they're going to treat it like, hey, every game is the last, that's exactly what you want, because that's a schedule that could beat you up. My only fear is
that's true, yeah.
You don't really see this much in the AAC. You used to see this more in Conference USA, where teams that would have to go and get their checks to fund their programs and go take their losses at big time Power Five schools. Oftentimes what those teams would do is kind of try to keep everybody healthy as much as possible for conference play, because that's what they were going to get judged on. But USF's trying to build momentum and they're trying to, like, you know, be kind of splashy. Are they going to go all out and try to, like, you know, impress people in these games? Or are they going to sit there and go, hey, those are our first five games of the season. We then get a bye week, and then we get Memphis at home, UAB, another bye week, at FAU, Navy, at UCF, Tulsa, at Rice. Like, that's a schedule that we could almost run the table at late. Let's make sure we're good to go for that point. Like, that's something that fascinates me early about South Florida, is how are they going to, like, navigate this first part of their schedule, which can be absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, for sure. It's definitely a brutal start to the schedule. They've got some exciting games if you're a
for
fan
sure.
There down in Tampa. But I wonder, because we talked about this with Blake last week, about just the perception of those, like, the Pac-2 teams. Like, everybody still kind of thinks of them as power schools and in a power conference, and will that matter? And when it comes down to conference realignment, we're back into it, right, this week. I was not expecting much of our conversation this week to be back talking about conference realignment, but with the UConn news, like, I look at South Florida, and just because – you know, of obviously where they're located, right?
Yep.
Their location matters. But, like, they just can't, how much can they run off of the fact that they just, people confuse them with Central Florida for so much?
Yeah.
I really think that they've got, like, that confusion is going to help them possibly jump the next time people are looking. That, their location, the potential of that market and all. This is a scary team. We do not want them to have, if you're a Memphis fan, you definitely don't want them to have a successful season.
Well, and
it looks really hard start for them.
Very difficult start, but also if you're going to be in this beauty contest with them, South Florida's building an on-campus stadium. Like, I mean, they seem to actually have, like, gotten to the finish line. They're going to be able to do that. Like this is someone that you're going to kind of be judged against.
And it's that Tampa market. They're going to want Tampa State
sure.
in Florida, whatever conference, like, unless there's another Florida school that's trying to fight against them. You know, that's your only hope, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, maybe Central Florida doesn't, you know, Central Florida doesn't want them, you know, I can see that. I mean,
but they've been together for so long before.
Well, and then the question is, like, how loud is Central Florida's voice? Does anyone care? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what if someone, if Central Florida's griping and complaining, it's a legitimately... obvious response to be like, you should be lucky to be here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we'll do what we're going to do for our best interest.
Right.
Let's
I agree.
Let's go with CeeDee Lamb.
You just made the list.
Yeah, we'll get into some more NFL stuff next, but we did have the big news of the day. Dallas Cowboys wide receiver CeeDee Lamb has ended his holdout and agreed to a 4-year, $136 million deal that makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history, Sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter on Monday. The deal includes a $38 million signing bonus, the largest ever given to a wide receiver, and $100 million of guaranteed money per sources. Lamb was set to play the 2024 season on the $17.99 million fifth-year option of his rookie deal and become a free agent after the season, but the Cowboys were able to lock him up through the 28th season with the new deal. The Vikings' Justin Jefferson tops the market at $35 million per season. The Eagles' A.J. Brown checks in at $32 million per season. The Lions' Amon-Ra St. Brown at $30 million a year. Tyreek also at $30 million a year. The deal makes Lamb the highest paid wide receiver in Cowboys history. Okay, so without getting too like agent-y and what are all the deals, what matters to me is massive signing bonus. Like, that's guaranteed money, and that clears right now. And then the other thing that is interesting to me about this deal, Kevin, the Cowboys are a team that when they get skill guys, they like to lock them up on longer-term deals. Now, there's a couple of ways of thinking about it if you're a skill guy. Most skill guys would prefer to have a shorter-term deal because the market keeps going up and up and up, and that gives you another opportunity to get into free agency sooner. What this kind of tells me is, listen, everybody probably gives up a little bit in a negotiation, but CeeDee Lamb largely won this standoff with the Cowboys. And to me, that's kind of my big takeaways, because CeeDee wanted fewer years. He got the fewer years. He still gets big money. Like, CeeDee kind of got what he wanted.
Yeah, but I hate that we won't be able to see him in the playoffs.
Beyond wild card weekend.
Right. But so this makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history.
See, this is
second
where it gets
highest paid.
That's where it gets so agent-y, because it's like, what is that based on average per year? I mean,
what makes it it's not like it in one. Yeah. How are you breaking it down? It's not because you could get paid X amount for 1 year, X amount on a contract, X amount of,
right.
Or in a total amount of the, how much is include the bonus. But I mean, the fact is he's up there though on the list of highest. I mean, we remember the time when Mike Conley was like the highest paid.
Yeah, because it worked out that Mike's deal was up when the salary cap went way up and teams had to spend 90% of the salary cap. So Mike was lucky in that fashion. I'm not saying Mike was lucky to get the deal. Like, we all know what Mike meant, but Mike was very lucky that his deal was up when it was up. You know what I mean?
All right, so who are the other five? Do you know the other five highest? I've got the five highest paid NFL wide receivers after CeeDee Lamb.
Okay, can you tell me, is it based on total contract per year? What do we got?
Yeah, no, it's always like that, right?
Yeah, because this is where it's like everyone, it just gets so confusing. It's like, okay, break it down.
Let's see. We're trying this is just from the list. I guess it's guaranteed money.
Okay.
Over the life of the contract, it looks like.
So guaranteed money, Justin Jefferson. Justin's on that list, right? Yeah. He should be
Minnesota Vikings wide receiver. He became the NFL's highest paid wide receiver already. Was that this year?
That was this summer.
So $140 million contract, include $110 million guaranteed.
All right. Then Amon-Ra, St. Brown, Lions. He should be on that list.
He followed a breakout season in the Lions, fourth year, $120 million contract. So the Lions, the Cowboys, and the Vikings. Also, though, in between there, we've got... another one on this list. How accurate it is. This is a Newsweek story they posted really fast.
So the next two are either going to be, it's A.J. Brown or Jalen Waddle in some order.
A.J. Brown near the top of the list. He, 3-year, $96 million extension earlier this year, puts him with the team through 2029. He gets an average of $32 million per season. That's with the Eagles. So you got the Eagles. Then the other one, takes you to Florida.
So it's either Jalen Waddle or Tyreek.
Yes, it's Tyreek Hill.
Because Tyreek got a redone. Yeah. They redid Tyreek Hill. Like three or three weeks ago.
Obviously, yeah. Anytime we talk, you know, it's like it, with movies and with sports contracts, it's always like the most recent ones are going to be that because of inflation and because of changing in salary caps. But it's interesting. It's all like these are all guys that signed this year, almost pretty much on this entire list. But your teams are, you got the Vikings, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Lions, and the Dolphins. You tell me which team we're looking at.
This is the most success this year. That's kind of the other interesting aspect of it, because if you look at it, and I know this is not a fair apples to apples comparison, but Patrick Mahomes had Tyreek Hill. They couldn't pay everybody. They let Tyreek walk. And it wasn't like they let Tyreek. This is not a situation where Tyreek goes leaves the Chiefs and we see like, oh, he's washed. No, Tyreek left the Chiefs and he was still awesome. Like, he's still arguably the best player in football. But they won one Super Bowl with Tyreek and they've won two without him. Like, it's this kind of weird thing of, if you don't have super elite quarterback, I think you have to surround him with super elite weapons. So if you're making me pick which one of those guys goes the farthest, I'm gonna say it's Amon-Ra St. Brown, because I believe in their quarterback the most.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I see Detroit. Which one of these guys would you draft in your fantasy draft? You had it already. You got Justin Jefferson.
So I've got one tonight, one Thursday.
And AJ Brown.
We do auction draft. We do auction draft. So it's not as easy as saying. It's not as easy as saying, like, you know, I've got so-and-so pick, whatnot. Like, I will tell you, I power rank my receivers as Tyreek, Justin, and Jamar Chase. I kind of all have them the same.
And those are like the wide receiver position, which is like, to me, watching football, right? It's one of my favorite, because it is like, it's very important, right? You got to catch that football. But like in fantasy or just in building a real team, so, like you kind of think,
it used to be
obviously the quarterback.
It used to be in auction drafts. It used to be that everybody overpaid for running backs because there are so few elite running backs. If you have one, it completely like changes everything. And then much like kind of what the NFL became, everybody then started realizing like, why would I overpay for one of these elite running backs when I can have like two or three elite receivers? And to your point, it's kind of, we've seen the receivers have a little, like, elite receivers are pretty consistent. Like, if they play, they all kind of put up similar numbers. They obviously have better games than some, but, like, you can kind of know what you're getting.
Well, if there's situation change, right? If they're on a new team with a new quarterback, if they've got a new quarterback, then you possibly got something different. But if they're returning and their quarterback's coming back, they're gonna be consistent.
Well, like, how many times does Tyreek just put up, like, unless he gets hurt during the game, it's like, how often does Tyreek put up three catches for 12 yards? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just usually, even if he doesn't have a great game, he's still like, he still had about 10 catches, 80 yards, and he probably found the end zone. Like, that's kind of what...
He led the NFL last year, of course, with yards and touchdowns. 17. He had 17 touchdowns last year.
Like, I wanted to go to his game log. Like, his game log from last year. All right.
That being, of course, Tyreek Hill down playing for Miami.
Like, his worst games were... He had a New England game where he only caught 5 passes, still scored. A Buffalo game, 3 catches for 58. 4 catches for 61 against the Titans. Then it's like 8 for 62, 7 for 76. Like, it's a bad receiver game is still usually better than a bad running back game. So, but the problem is now everybody's now adjusting, so now everyone's paying for receivers. So it's like, is now the time to swing back to running back? Like, I don't know. That's kind of where I am at. Like, and I don't know about you. Like, I've now gotten to the point where I just hate fantasy football. There's nothing worse than like on Sunday when I'm betting one way, and then I've got a fantasy guy on the other side. And it's like, do I root for him? Do I root for the bet? It's just so confusing.
But legal gambling has changed it a little bit.
100%
for some people, but a lot of people don't even like really, you know, the gamble. There's the community aspect of the fantasy football, but
the only reason I play is to keep. No, I mean, the only reason I'm in fantasy leagues is one is to keep up with my college friends, the other is to keep up with my high school friends. But then I moved back to Memphis, and it's like, okay, well, I'm still in the same group. Like, we see each other.
Right, but it's still, you know, it's something for that bragging rights or whatever.
Tonight
reason,
is the most
to get together.
Tonight's the most fun night of fantasy football. Tonight is the Zoom when we do the draft and everybody is on the that's the most fun night.
And then, like, I used to have like four or five teams, right? Well,
you can be in the 92.9 league. I guarantee you that if you're not already.
If you want me to, I'll join. But I don't think I'll check that. If y'all need a bye week, sign me up, because that's what I've become. I've just become like, I totally stopped checking it. So I'm that guy now.
And then,
I don't like being that guy, so I don't want to sign up. But I'm the guy who will not check it after a few weeks.
Then there's nothing worse that you forget that the first London game happens at like October, and that game kicked off at 8, and you're like, I totally didn't set that lineup.
Yeah,
like
starting somebody something. It's just
yes,
but it's not the same anymore. I think as than it used to be, it's fascinating. A lot of times, I still go back and kind of look at that perspective when you look at these players and the individual positions in the NFL, because that is, it still matters.
Oh, it's still a huge part. I mean, if it were not a huge part of sports, like ESPN would not focus as much energy and attention as they do. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to stay in the NFL when we come back. The Athletic has ranked tiers of quarterbacks. ESPN has ranked their top 100 NFL players. We'll discuss the discrepancies, where we agree, where we disagree. We'll do all that next when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Kevin, do we have an official update on the sad news about Sid Vicious?
Yeah, TMZ now reporting that their headline, WWE legend Sid Vicious dead at 63 after cancer battle. So 63 years old, Sid Vicious. Of course, native of Marion, Arkansas, still lived there, still had an impact here around the city. You'd see him around, whether he's playing softball or...
Wrestlers love softball.
They do, especially old school Memphis.
Yeah, the old school Memphis,
right?
They all play softball.
And Sid, a former member of the Four Horsemen, right? As you would remember, but just was... amazing presence in professional wrestling as far as his size and his charisma, his promo style. If you really break it down and you watch a Psycho Sid promo, like it really is pretty amazing. He's got obviously he makes mistakes occasionally. There's some of those that have been viral over the years, but I've always liked he had this way of trying to sell you for a match where he would be screaming at you at the top of this lungs. And he'd be like, and then he'd start whispering, being like, "I am the master and the ruler of the world." Like he had this like high ups
he'd
and
pull,
downs.
He'd pull you, and then he'd pull the camera in too when he'd get soft,
right? And he'd just get real soft and whisper, and he'd scare you. Like it would be fantastic. His promo style, very unique, very awesome. He's the only guy. This is always a fun fact I always like to talk about. Psycho Sid, of course, he was Psycho Sid in WWE. Sid Vicious in Memphis, and Sid Vicious in WCW. Sid Justice for a second as well. He's the only guy to win the WWF title on Raw and the WCW title on Nitro. Only guy to win those titles on Raw and Nitro, right? The Monday Night Wars, he's the only guy to complete that feat. It's just a random cool fact about Sid, but it's very, very sad. 63. I mean, do you remember his injury that took him out there, Jeffrey? It was one of the most horrific things.
Yeah.
And you will see jumping off the top rope when he shouldn't have been, I guess. Obviously, he shouldn't have been because he tore his leg up, and just a devastating injury that ended his career in WCW and in professional wrestling in general. But then this guy's main evented WrestleManias before, and he's main evented Starrcade. So he's got these great accolades, and definitely be missed.
That is... I don't know how you are. Like, there's some guys that I know that, like, love videos of guys getting hurt, like, injury videos. I am not in that camp. I'm not making a moral judgment. Like, I get squeamish. I have seen that one time.
Like, anytime it'll pop up, like, on a YouTube video or, like, a grossest injury, I'm like, nope, no thank you. It's like that, the Alex Smith, the Willis McGahee. It's like all the, not for me.
And this is injury. I mean, it's up there. It's up there on that.
Yes, on, very much.
All time, like, you don't want to see it. It's just, it's very gruesome. But his leg bent the wrong way. Former multi-time world champion. Like this guy, he wrestled Undertaker, I know, at WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. This guy had an amazing career. Still, I don't know. When I would talk to him again, I had him on the radio. He was on the radio with me like every week, him or his wife, to talk about his son, Frank, who was a big brother player over a decade ago. And he would always correct me to distinguish between the fact that he was from Marion and not from West Memphis, even though, but he would be introduced as being from West Memphis all the time. The master of the powerbomb, former four horsemen. That's a long list, but not as long as the NWO, right? A former member of that faction. But rest in peace to Sid Vicious. I hate seeing that news today, because I felt like he definitely had more to contribute to wrestling. And I know he loves his family, so our thoughts and prayers go out to them today.
All right, so we had two lists that came out today. One that didn't really offend me, one that I'm just confused at the top. All right, so let's start. Mike Sando does this list every single year, and this is kind of more of a list that speaks to me, because I'm not a huge fan of just let's straight up rank it 1 through 32. Like, I put players more in tiers, and it's kind of like, because then when you start doing it week to week, then it starts, or when you start putting them just straight up, ranking them in a list, how somebody plays 1 week changes. Like, and I don't really think about it that way. It's like, I view players in certain tiers. So over at The Athletic, we have tier one for quarterbacks. Number one, Patrick Mahomes. Number two, Joe Burrow. Number three, Josh Allen. Like, and the first question is whether or not there should be a tier zero for Mahomes, because Mahomes is probably on a different tier than these other guys. Like, to me, those are the three guys that I kind of put above the rest. Over at ESPN.
Who's on this list, right?
Correct. That's one, two, and three. Yeah. Four is Lamar. But now over at ESPN, they have ranked the top 100 players. Lamar is number two. And I always feel like I do this weird dance with Lamar of, okay, I have no problem with Lamar being right behind those guys. But the problem is, Lamar has gone up against those guys in the games that matter most, and he has largely been ineffective. Like, Josh Allen is 5-5 in the playoffs, but most of the time during those losses, it ain't usually his fault. And there's other circumstances. I just don't understand the insistence upon, let's put Lamar up there, when we just saw back in back-to-back weeks, we saw the Bills take on the Chiefs, and the Bills miss a field goal and lose by three. We see the Ravens play in an AFC Championship game at home, and they were like, the final score was way closer than the game was. And it's like, I don't understand, like, why we're insisting upon this. It doesn't mean that if this year plays out differently, I could change my mind. I could, but it's like, right now, there's no way that Lamar's the number two player in the NFL.
I agree with you on that. But your arguments are fantastic. I want to see you you need to be in these selection committee rooms here when it comes to the playoffs and stuff. You're right. Like, it matters when you go up against the other guys who are in contention for those spots on these lists. So that definitely matters in any rankings of all. What is it like against the competition? It's the SEC tiebreaker, right? That's number one on the list for the tiebreakers. We try to figure out this Division III conference champion later on this year. It's going to be, how did you compete against the other top competition? And if you lost the playoffs, then you're not ranked as high. But
it was I can't remember there was a study that I saw once. I believe it was on YouTube. And the guy really laid it out in a very nice fashion, because CJ McCollum is another guy that
has this reputation, great regular season player, bad playoff guy. And the guy laid it out with a very nice visual graphic, and he pointed out, well, over the course of a regular season in the NBA, CJ McCollum is clearly going to be a better than average basketball player. His advantage in the regular season is going to be at a higher level. But then when you start to get to the playoffs and the number of bad players, bad teams shrinks, well, he loses his advantage. Like when he's now being, when he's being compared to, you know, players 50 through 100, he compares better. But now when he's being compared to players 1 through 20, well, that's a difficult, it's a different level of competition. And like, to me, that's kind of the same thing. It's like, when we're watching Lamar week to week, like, yeah, he's better. Like, I still have him as the fourth best quarterback in the league. It's not like I'm saying Lamar stinks. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's Psycho Sid versus the jobber, right? And then Sid wrestles Hulk Hogan. It's a different scenario here. Like, you got to, when you're going up against somebody of your equal level,
in a
high stakes moment, that's what's going
to
happen.
I use this one on Harrington because he's just wrestling literate enough to get it. We were talking about Jason Tatum. And I told him, I was like, this is kind of half-baked, but I think I'm onto something. I view Jason Tatum as Triple H. Everything about Tatum's game is extremely solid. Like, he's B-plus or better in just about everything. But when it comes to, like, peak top performance, like, I just don't have him on the same tier as I do, like, the all-time greats. I still think he's an awesome, awesome basketball player. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Triple H is an awesome wrestler. Even in at his peak, he was still an awesome wrestler. But it's just like peak pop versus Stone Cold or Rock. It's like he's not quite there for me.
He's not going to be on a Mount Rushmore, even if you're doing a Mount Rushmore of a certain era. Like, probably not on the, you know, Triple H is that same way. Like, there's other people who are possibly going to bump them all.
But he was a great, but they're both great. Like, it's that's kind of how I view it. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get in, or we'll tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. For today's Tell Your Story, Not The Story, Dabo Swinney will no longer take live calls from fans on his weekly radio show, The Tiger Sports Hour with Dabo Swinney. Fans, however, can submit questions to him via text or email, but no more live callers. Kev, we can't have another Tyler in Spartanburg situation. But we'll take those. We'll sift through those questions. We'll see the ones that we like, the ones that are approved.
Right.
Want to thank...
Yeah, send them on over.
Exactly. Send in your best. Want to thank Jason Munns for joining the program. If you missed anything, we have on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Kevin, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show's coming up next.
Memphis is number one place for sports. This is WMFS-FM and HD1 Bartlett. WMFS Memphis, flagship home of the Memphis Grizzlies. 92.9 FM, ESPN, and Odyssey Sports Station. Gabe Kuhn, weekdays from 4 p.m. till 7 p.m.
But now he's an analyst at ESPN and SEC Network, co-host of Mac and Cube at Jocks in Birmingham. Again, on X at Cole Kubelik. What do you think about how Auburn's going to manage their season this year?
I think they will exceed expectations. Now, by how far is going to depend on some of those guys, a couple of them that didn't play great football last year.
92.9 FM ESPN's Gabe Kuhn Show. Well, the only lineman on the radio, Gabe Kuhn. Weekdays from 4 p.m. till 7 p.m.
Ready to take your business to the next level? In today's fast-paced marketing world, staying ahead isn't just an option. It's essential. That's where scale marketing comes in. We don't just help you compete, we make sure you win. Whether you're looking to grow, expand, or overcome stagnation, Scale Marketing is your performance marketing partner. We specialize in helping mid-sized B2C companies with teams of over 100 thrive. Scale Marketing is a full-service agency offering expertise in performance marketing across traditional and digital platforms, creative production, and data analytics. We treat your money like it's our own, ensuring every dollar is spent with purpose and every decision is driven by data. Our knowledgeable team stays ahead of the trends, crafting strategies that align with your business goals. Partnering with Scale Marketing means gaining a dedicated strategist and a team committed to your success. If you're ready to lead the market, visit scalemarketing.com today. That's scalemarketing.com.
Are you looking to save on gas? Well, we got it covered at Gossett Kia on the Pike with 41 in Beachy Highway and your new 2024 Kia Forte LXS. $199 a month, $37.99 due at signing. Or how about a 2024 Kia EV9 Lite with 0% APR available for 48 months? Or get 304 EPA estimated range for $389 a month, $49.99 due at signing. All 24-month lease. Plus, you always get...
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.